One of the most powerful of all recordings in our archives comes from 4 days after German troops marched into Prague, on the 15th of March 1939, beginning 6 years of occupation. We hear the popular Czech broadcaster Franta Kocourek, who is given the awful task of reporting live on a huge military parade from the top of Wenceslas Square, with an officer of the Wehrmacht by his side. His report, thinly veiled in symbolic language, captures the despair of the nation.
Nyní právě projíždějí kolem ohromná děla protiletecká.
At this moment, huge anti-aircraft guns are passing, pulled on tractors, each manned by 12 soldiers. Behind them are further smaller anti-aircraft guns and searchlights. But I would also like to talk about one thing that has nothing to do with the military. From somewhere far away, a huge black crow has flown into Prague. I have seen it spread its wings and sweep down above the square over the searchlights and the listening devices being paraded here by the German army. It must be surprised at the noise and all that is going on beneath it.
This and similar broadcasts over the coming months were to cost Franta Kocourek his life. He was arrested and perished in 1942 in Auschwitz-Birkenau. At the beginning of the occupation, there was an illusion of normality. But radio in the so-called Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia also featured plenty of Nazi propaganda. At the height of the Blitzkrieg, the Germans sent a team of Czech journalists to Belgium to report on the successes of the Wehrmacht as German troops swept towards the Channel ports.
Města jako Gent a krásné Brugy jsou sice válkou nedotčeny.
Cities like Ghent and the beautiful old town of Bruges remain untouched, the reporter says. But in the villages where the enemy offered resistance, we saw the ruins of houses destroyed by artillery or aerial torpedoes. The streets were lined by the wrecks of tanks, cars and other military material. They seemed to me like road signs marking the retreat of the English and the Belgians towards the coast.
At the end of 1939, the BBC in London began its broadcasts in Czech to counter German propaganda.
Volá Londýn. Rozloučili jsme se s prvním transportem československých dobrovolců odcházejících z Velké Británie do Francie.
Volá Londýn, London Calling, became the familiar call sign of the Czech broadcasts. Here the BBC is reporting about Czech and Slovak volunteers marching past the Czechoslovak embassy in Grosvenor Place, singing patriotic songs before being sent out to fight in France alongside their British comrades.
Teď ještě ne, až za chvilku, až za zní děla.
Jiří Voskovec and Jan Verich, who had been famous in the Prague of the 1920s and 30s for their satirical cabaret, were now in exile in the United States. Their broadcasts from Washington, bitter satires on Nazi Germany, also became part of life in their occupied homeland. But it took courage to listen, as tuning into foreign stations was punishable by death.
In the meantime, in the occupied protectorate, what had been the German language broadcasts of Czechoslovak radio were absorbed into the broadcasts of the Reich, the so-called Reichssender, and some of these recordings also survive in the Czech radio archives. One of them is from June 1941, and it features an interview with a nurse who was living and working in Prague. She remembers with great nostalgia one particular patient who came into her care during the First World War. This is how the broadcast began.
Oberschwester Anna, die Frau, die 1918
Ward sister Anna is the nurse who in 1918 in the Pasewalk field hospital looked after a lance corporal who had been wounded and blinded by gas. Her patient was Adolf Hitler.
Von Erlebnissen mit Adolf Hitler.
The announcer utters the Führer's name in a tone of deepest reverence, and then Ward sister Anna goes on to recall her memories with an evident sense of deep pride.
1918,
on the 7th of October 1918, I had to bring a transport with wounded soldiers from France to Pasewalk. One of them was Lance Corporal Adolf Hitler. On the train, my thoughts were with him in particular. As often as I could, I sat by his bed because his words about his comrades always brought comfort. He once said, "A new Germany must awaken." His observation when we said farewell and he left the field hospital was, "Even though at the moment I'm unable to see, I shall struggle to see within."
Wenn ich augenblicklich auch nicht sehe, werde ich kämpfen, dass ich innerlich sehend werde.
As a God-fearing Christian, Ward's sister Anna is clearly a little bothered by the idea that Adolf Hitler might be anything less than a good Christian himself. Her tone becomes increasingly grotesque.
Ich möchte gleichzeitig hinzufügen, dass es unwahr ist, wenn so oft gesagt wird.
I want to add that it's not true what people so often say about our Führer, that he has no faith. He is one of God's chosen ones. On the belt buckle of each soldier I see the words "God with us." If back then someone had said to me that Lance Corporal Adolf Hitler would one day become the Führer of a nation of 80 million, I might well have laughed. But you could tell from his character that this soldier was something special. There has never been anything like it in the history of the world.
So etwas war in der Weltgeschichte noch nicht da gewesen.
She ends by describing a letter she wrote some years later that reminds us of the hypnotic power that Hitler must have held over so many people at the time.
1935 schrieb ich zum ersten Mal an meinen geliebten Führer.
In 1935 I wrote to my beloved Führer for the first time. I must get this off my chest. My Führer, I could be your mother. How good it would be if a dear mother's hand could run lovingly through your hair, because sometimes you seem so alone with all your worries and work. But no, my Führer, you are not alone. God and your whole nation love you.
Any illusion of at least partial independence in the Protectorate came to an end in September 1941, when Hitler appointed Reinhard Heydrich as acting Reichsprotector of Bohemia and Moravia.
Na hradě Pražském se dnes 28. září koná slavnost, při které zástupce pana říšského protektora SS Obergruppenführer.
The radio reported on his inauguration at Prague Castle as a military band played the German national anthem. Reinhard Heydrich was one of the darkest figures of the Third Reich and one of the prime instigators of the Holocaust. Almost immediately he arrested the Prime Minister of the Czech puppet government, Alois Eliáš, who had maintained secret contacts with the Czechoslovak government in exile in London.
Bývalý předseda protektorátní vlády Alois Eliáš byl prvním senátem lidového soudu pro nadržování nepříteli.
On October 2, 1941, the radio announced Eliáš's execution. But Heydrich's reign was to be short-lived. 7 months later, he was assassinated by Jan Kubisch and Josef Gabčík, who had been parachuted to the Protectorate from London. He died from his wounds 8 days later.
In the wake of the assassination, the Nazis took extreme measures to suppress any hint of Czech resistance. They started with huge gatherings on Prague's Old Town Square, at which Czechs were expected to demonstrate their loyalty to the Reich.
Občané, má čest zahájit první veřejnou manifestaci českého lidu.
The first of these was on June the 2nd, when Heydrich was still dying in hospital. And one of those who spoke was the collaborationist Prime Minister Jaroslav Krejčí, whose words held a thinly concealed threat.
Mílí se ti, kdo si myslí, že v této hodině splní všechny své povinnosti, pronesou-li několik slov.
Those of you who think it is enough just to express a few words of loyalty to the Reich and then go back to your old indifference are mistaken. The government will set up new bodies to control thoroughly just how well orders are respected. Anyone who fails to act in the interest of our nation and our obligations to the Reich will be punished as he deserves.
Das Standgericht Prag hat mit Urteil vom 2. Juni 1942 zum Tode durch.
To reinforce the message, the Gestapo began arresting and executing Czechs in huge numbers, reading out the long lists every day in their radio broadcasts.
Zweitens, Svoboda Vladimir, Doktor, Rechtsanwalt, geboren am 30.05.1900, wohnhaft Budweis.
The Nazis trumped up a connection between the assassination and the village of Lidice, a few kilometers west of Prague.
Im Zuge der Fahndungen nach den Mördern des SS-Obergruppenführers Heydrich.
In the course of searching for the murderers of SS-Obergruppenführer Heydrich, irrefutable evidence has been found that the inhabitants of the village, Lidice near Kladno, gave support and help to the perpetrators. On the night from the 9th to the 10th of June 1942, the Nazis destroyed the entire village.
Nachdem die Einwohner dieses Dorfes durch ihre Tätigkeit und durch die Unterstützung der Mörder von SS-Obergruppenführer Heydrich.
After the inhabitants of the village, through their activities and support for the murderers of SS-Obergruppenführer Heydrich, broke the law in the most blatant way, the male adults have been shot, the women transferred to a concentration camp, and the children taken away for suitable education. The buildings of the village have been razed to the ground and the name of the village has been wiped out.
Die Gebäude des Ortes sind dem Erdboden gleichgemacht und der Name der Gemeinde ist ausgelöscht worden.
In total, more than 340 villagers were killed, including the great majority of the children. But in propaganda terms, the destruction of Lidice was hugely counterproductive for the Nazis. It helped to rally support among the Allies for the cause of defeating Hitler. Here is the Czechoslovak president in exile, Edvard Beneš, talking from London just after the massacre.
Heydrich is dead, so are hundreds of innocent Czechs, among them women and youth under the age of 18. So are all the men who lived in the little village of Lidice. Their mothers, their wives and sisters are in a concentration camp. But in our own records and in the records of humanity, the name of Lidice will loom large. Lidice will live forever. And we must all stand together in order to prepare, after victory has been achieved, a peace in Europe of which we could already today solemnly declare that all that we are passing through now, today, in this war, will never happen again.
A huge demonstration held in London in March 1943 was broadcast on shortwave to occupied Europe with a message of solidarity.
London calls Prague! Londýn zdraví Prahu! We are now going to give a pledge which will be broadcast from this hall to the Czechoslovak people and to the rest of Europe over the heads of the enemy. This is the pledge. Together we shall fight in a world at war. Let us build together a world of peace. Londýn zdraví Prahu!
A few years ago, someone at the Czech Foreign Ministry stumbled upon a trunk, which contained a large number of old gramophone records. It was clear from the labels that many of them were made in Britain during the war. It turned out that they were a combination of broadcasts made by the BBC and the Czechoslovak government in exile, as part of the propaganda war effort in support of Czechoslovakia. Here is a short extract from one broadcast devoted to the Czechoslovak airman serving in the Royal Air Force.
That is a song sung in a foreign land. A song written in Czechoslovakia before the war and played now in England. The men who are singing to you are men who have escaped from their own country and are now serving in Britain in the great Allied air offensive against Germany. Men of the 1st Czech Fighter Squadron. The pilot's room is a hut on the edge of the airfield. Before the door, there are flower beds where they have created in flowers and earth and gravel a map of Czechoslovakia, symbol of a united loyalty. Come inside. Some are playing chess on a camp bed. Under the table, nose on paws, eye cocked on his master, Dragon, the Alsatian, keeps watch. Music and chess, occupations of the waiting hours.
Another recording found in the same box is from the 17th of November 1944, marking the 5th International Students' Day, which was introduced to remember the date when the Nazis closed institutions of higher education in occupied Bohemia and Moravia.
He had been wounded in the mass demonstrations on October 28th, machine-gunned like thousands of others. These students stood bareheaded and silent at his gravesite as the earth pattered down over his coffin. His spirit was still alive.
The closure, accompanied by mass arrests, followed demonstrations by Czech students and teachers. One student, Jan Opletal, had been shot and died a few days later.
After his funeral, they were frightened. They said to each other, "We must crush this living spirit. How can it be done?" They chose the only way they knew. It was a few hours before dawn, on November the 17th.
The program takes the form of a radio play. It is extremely well written, and is probably the same broadcast as one mentioned in the BBC's Radio Times a year earlier, written by the poet Louis MacNeice.
His spirit was still alive. We went away to make more plans, to organize more sabotage, and the Germans knew that.
By the second half of the war, the nominal president of the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, Emil Hácha, was already a broken man, having failed to preserve even a fragment of Czech autonomy. On March the 15th, 1944, Hácha delivered a speech on Prague Radio to mark the 5th anniversary of the beginning of the occupation. It was only meant to be a brief message, but by then he was already sick and weak, scarcely able even to play the grotesque ceremonial role that he had been left by the Nazis. The radio reporters who went up to the castle to record the speech had a great deal more difficulty than they expected. The entire recording is preserved, including several failed attempts by the ailing Hácha to speak coherently. On several occasions his voice breaks down completely. At one point, the reporter Josef Cincibus cautiously interrupts the president. "That was fine," he says diplomatically. "But perhaps, Mr. President, it would be a good idea to read it again, a bit louder, and as if you really felt what you were saying." Cincibus goes on to demonstrate by reading a couple of sentences. This bizarre scene is repeated on several occasions, until, on the 11th attempt, the final version is recorded. The speech goes as follows. Dear fellow citizens, 5 years is not a long time in the life of a nation, but enough to destroy it for several generations. We have seen this in the example of some other small nations. Sometimes there is only a moment between the path of life and the path of death. It was at one such moment that we decided that our future life lay within the greater German Reich. Since that time, we have faced many obstacles, but we have managed to remain intact. I have noticed that as a nation, we could even be said to be rising in terms of our inner strength. This is the most important proof that we followed the right path. I ask you to continue under all circumstances to be faithful to this country's leaders, to the Reich, whose victory will bring you and your children a happy future. May God's goodwill never leave us. By that time, the tide of war was already turning. Less than 3 months after Hacha's speech, on June the 6th, 1944, Czech and Slovak airmen in Britain's Royal Air Force took part in D-Day. And a few weeks later, the 1st Czechoslovak Armoured Brigade was deployed, its mission to besiege the German-held French port of Dunkirk. It was to the Czechoslovak Brigade that the German garrison was eventually to surrender in May 1945.
This is a Czechoslovak government dispatch, recorded at Dunkirk on 21st January, describing a visit of Red Army men.
In January 1945, Czech reporters from London came to visit Czechoslovak troops outside Dunkirk, where they had been joined by over 800 Red Army men. The Soviet commander opened proceedings with a greeting in Russian.
His men were Soviet soldiers who had escaped from German prisoner and labor camps in Holland and Belgium and had managed to survive in hiding until they were liberated. Now they were getting ready to go home, and the Czechoslovak troops in France wanted to thank them for the Red Army's victories on the Eastern Front. As we can hear, the celebrations were loud and enthusiastic. Nearly 2,000 miles to the east, the Nazi Empire was also shrinking fast. In Slovakia, the town of Banská Bystrica became the focus of the Slovak national uprising that broke out at the end of August 1944, when Slovaks rebelled against the Nazis. Radio played a role in rallying Slovaks to join the rebellion. Here the speaker is appealing to citizens and army reservists. At the same time, the Red Army, including over 16,000 Czechoslovak troops, was approaching from the north and east. Soviet radio, through the voice of its legendary broadcaster Yuri Levitan, informed of the Red Army's advances as troops penetrated Czechoslovak territory.
But the Red Army offensive was to meet far tougher German resistance than had been expected. In the two-month campaign that came to be known as the Dukla Preshov operation, 21,000 Soviet troops lost their lives, along with nearly 2,000 Czechoslovak soldiers.
We are in Prague. It is just before midday on St. Valentine's Day, February the 14th, 1945, and we hear the familiar sound of an air raid siren, captured here in a Czech broadcast from the time. In previous weeks, Czechs had got used to the sirens, as Allied bombers had launched raid after raid on German cities. But so far, the German-occupied Czech capital had been spared. This time, it was different. Around lunchtime, a fleet of American flying fortresses dropped 152 tons of bombs over the densely populated centre of the city. The result was 701 people killed and over 1,000 injured. The bombing was probably a mistake, as a huge raid on nearby Dresden was underway at the same time. But it gave the German occupiers a perfect opportunity to turn the raid into a propaganda coup. Here was Prague Radio the next day.
Včera jsme plně pochopili význam slova teror, které znamená český hrůz.
Yesterday we fully understood the meaning of the word terror, the reporter declares. With the building still on fire, he goes on to describe the scene in a city cafe where dozens of unidentified bodies are lying, burnt or dug out from the ruins. A few days later, the dead were buried and the mass funeral was a big propaganda opportunity. The reporter describes how the city's Nazi officials, with their right arms raised in a Hitler salute, say their final farewell as the dead are buried in their simple wooden coffins. While the bombing of Prague was a mistake, air raids on some of the heavily industrial towns and cities of the Protectorate most definitely were not. Here the Protectorate radio in the city of Brno announces, first in German and then in Czech, that it is suspending broadcasts as enemy aircraft are approaching.
In a series of air raids in 1944 and 1945, Brno suffered considerable damage in residential as well as industrial areas. 1,200 people lost their lives and over 12,000 buildings were damaged. But the air raids also marked the beginning of the end of the German occupation.